The views expressed on the patient's perspective come directly from patients, so they are not intended to diagnose, treat, or replace professional medical advice. Information coming from the patient's perspective is for entertainment and educational purposes only. So if you have any health concerns regarding yourself or anyone else, please see a physician. The Patient's Perspective is a podcast created by patients for patients and does not focus on any specific disease or condition. Content may make you laugh, cry, and question your moral beliefs surrounding healthcare and the many issues patients run into while in the system. Finally, the most important point of view is cast into the light. The patient's perspective.
On today's episode of The Patient's Perspective, we interview Tanya Roberts. Tanya has a Bachelor of Social Work with a minor in psychology, has an associate degree in criminal justice, law enforcement training, as well as certificated in tribunal administrative justice. Tanya is a seasoned decision maker, investigator, and a Workers' Compensation Act subject matter expert. Tanya's using her skill set and knowledge to speak up against systematic abuse and corruption that are putting populations at risk, specifically disabled and injured workers and seniors. Through an in-depth investigation, Tanya has been able to identify systematic abuse of processes and corruption in her home province of New Brunswick. Tanya is speaking with us today to discuss her investigation findings, which has led to her making a very strong statement. The systems in place to protect our populations most vulnerable are systematically causing more harm through abuse of process and illegal, unethical decision making. Welcome, Tanya.
Hi. Just unmute me there. I wanted to hear your beautiful voice without any interruptions on my end. Thank you so much for that introduction. And thanks for inviting me back on to talk about these issues that impact every single person, whether they're in New Brunswick or on the other side of our beautiful country.
Yes. And to the listeners out there, we also have my co-host Candace here as well. Candace, do you want to say hi as well?
Hi all, and welcome back, Tanya. We had an amazing introductory discussion with Tanya like last week, and we decided we needed to get her on again and try to get this stuff out for her as fast as we can. Now, that's not generally our MO. We are chronically ill ladies, but this is so important, and we're going to push this for Tanya because she is doing the things that we all need as patients. So we're going to let her take it over again. And this will be like episode two. So welcome everybody into the discussion. And I hope that this can spark some talk. Thanks, Tanya.
Thank you, ladies. I guess where we kind of left off is we really all agree that we need to kind of hone in on what's going on with the injured workers of New Brunswick's personal health information. Part of the legislation in the Workers' Compensation Act is it really does give this organization a lot of authority to compel evidence, so to request medical evidence. Their policies are very clear on what information they are allowed to request and what information they are not allowed to request. The policies are also very clear on what how they're supposed to house this information and how they're supposed to protect this information and who they can or cannot share it with, which is basically nobody because the injured workers gives the authority of WorkSafe New Brunswick or WCB Alberta or underneath the Workers' Compensation Act. It gives them the authority to share some information if they're going outside to get medical opinions, like an independent medical examination. But still, it's very, very clear that the information that they're allowed to pull is restricted to whatever part of the body that you're trying to claim compensation for. So when I talk about this, I always say Mr. Injured Worker or Mrs. Injured Worker, and I always say right hand injury. So it's very, very black and white, and it's just an example. Like, I'm not thinking back of any specific claim, or, you know, if there's a worker out there thinking, I think she's talking about my file. I'm not, you know what I mean? I'm not going to jeopardize your privacy at all. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to fight for your privacy. So part of what the Workers' Compensation Act does is if Mr. or Mrs. Injured Worker comes in with their right hand injury, they have the authority to reach out and gather any medical information to do with the right hand injury. They're only allowed the information for the right hand injury from the day of accident forward. Okay. They are, like, if they're managing the claim file and they're seeing, like, say you have a strain or a fracture and it's not healing like it's supposed to, they are allowed to gather more information to see if there's any pre-existing condition or anything that may be impacting the progression or the healing of this work-related injury. Again, they're only allowed to go back and pull right-hand information back to 5 years or 10 years. And then they can use that information, and they're only supposed to be using that information to determine how your work injury impacted that pre-existing condition. They're not supposed to use that to disentitle, because all of our bodies have degeneration. We're all getting older, and there's some people in their 20s who has degeneration issues that are much more advanced than somebody in their 60s. It's just individual how our bodies respond to life, basically. So when they're collecting this information, just because you have a pre-existing condition doesn't mean that you're automatically, your benefits are shut down and everything can be blamed on that pre-existing injury. It's absolutely not like that. The Workers' Compensation Act allows for pre-existing conditions to be accepted in one or two different situations. Number one, if it's like structurally aggravated. So for example, say you had a little tear in your shoulder, and I mean, yeah, it hurt you, but you were able to do your job duties and it really wasn't impacting your quality of life or your ability to do your work. But now you have this injury, and this half tear is now a full tear, right? There's a structural change. It's a structural aggravation. It made your pre-existing injury worse. It's accepted. That's acceptable because your work injury changed the structure of your pre-existing condition. And now it's accepted. It's all accepted under your claim file. The second way that a pre-existing condition can be accepted under the Workers' Compensation Act, if it's like symptomatically aggravated. So there's some people that's just rolling around with a partial tear in their shoulder and have no idea that it's there. And then they get hurt at work. And then all of a sudden, oh my God, that's all they can feel is that tear. So there's been a symptomatic aggravation. Okay. The key when taking all of these into consideration is this was your quality of function as you were moving along life, okay? You were here. And then it's called the but for test. But for this work injury, it either becomes symptomatic or worsened. And you were unable, like your quality of life changed. You have now work restrictions. They are like, once there's that intervening factor from work, you're It has to be accepted under your claim and they have to manage it for you. Okay. And a lot of people try to hide back pre-existing conditions because they think, oh my God, but you have to understand if this was you and your pre-existing conditions, because we all have them, your employer hires you on as a whole person. And if you are able to do the job rolling through with your pre-existing condition and then something happens at work and it changes that, it's absolutely acceptable under the Workers' Compensation Act. Okay. So that's super important that I want every single person to understand, because in my experience reviewing decisions, appeals, that's the big kind of injustice that I've seen, that the decision makers aren't really taking the whole picture into account. Like, you can see it in the medical histories, right? You can see people after their injury, they're reporting more and more and more. Maybe they talked to their doctor 10 years ago about their shoulder, but they haven't talked about it again. And now they're talking about it every 2 weeks, right? It's but for that work accident. And that's the legal test. Candace, I see you unmuted.
Oh, I just want to thank you. Yeah, no, I'm writing a lot of notes here, because navigating without knowing your rights is dang near impossible.
Yeah.
And people don't know their rights. Like you said, clear policies restricted to claim. Immediately, I wrote FIPA.
Yeah.
So for the folks listening, it's PHIPPA, FIPA. That's your Personal Health Information Protection Privacy Act. So there's a legislation there. And so I wonder, I haven't read the entire thing. I'm just, you know, Tanya talked to us about her systems navigation experience last time she was here, and I have aims to help others navigate systems. So I'm just really thankful that you're here. And I'm going to let you continue, because you are giving us everything we need as citizens to take control of our personal health and what it means when you're working. And isn't that what the aim is for every government, every social system, everything, to just keep everybody working?
Absolutely. We need to, like, we all have challenges. And can you imagine, like, I just think back to my own personal struggles in life. And I can't imagine if the person who was there to help me really took their job seriously, I'd probably be running this goddamn country by now. Like, I can't imagine where I would end up if I had the support of somebody in my absolute lowest parts of my life. Like, and when you're dealing with people who went, like, rest assured, like, and I say this, I know it's hard for women who get hurt too, but I did a lot of my disability management career in Alberta, and like, we were dealing with the people from the oil rigs. And let me tell you, these are men, like, these are men, you know what I mean? And when you take that working man who is out and working, like, sometimes 3 weeks away from their family and home for 4 or 5 days, when you take that ability to earn from them, when you take that ability to help their wives bring in the groceries, they really start breaking down themselves. You know what I mean? And part of being a really good disability manager is saying, like, it's understanding that when one little thing happens in your life, it's a ripple effect. Okay. It's a ripple effect. When somebody gets hurt at work, it impacts everything. It impacts their family dynamics, because maybe mom's out shoveling the dooryard now instead of dad. And the neighbors are saying, Jesus, why isn't that man out shoveling his dooryard? Like, these are the things that are running through the heads of injured workers. And these are the conversations you have to have with them to say, you know what? I know it's a struggle right now. And I know it's hard to sit back and watch your spouse take on chores and responsibilities. And you see that if you're not supporting these people, that their systems at home are breaking down. And one thing I have seen a lot, I see, yeah, Kayla, one thing I see a lot, especially here looking at the claims in New Brunswick, is I would see these people come in, and when they're first getting their assessments done, they're saying, and they're talking about your support systems. I have a great support system. I have a good wife. I go to church. I have my motorcycle club. I have my RV club. I have my fishing buddies, right? Like, they're people with connections in society, and they're strong people. And I saw them in real time, like reading after conversations and stuff, and you can see them break down over time. And then 10 years later, you're finally reading how their claim has ended, and they no longer have a marriage. They no longer have that motorcycle that they waited all year long to do. They don't go out fishing anymore with their buddies. Like, their life has changed because of how these disability managers are maneuvering them through the system. And instead of seeing people when they're struggling, saying, I get the service for you, I know how to help you with that, they're saying, what the hell is wrong with you? This has nothing to do with your right hand injury. When they don't understand, it absolutely does. Look at them before their injury and look at them now. There's one factor, their work injury.
Yeah, so I just wanted to say,
people.
Yes. Yeah, I think Candace and I are probably jumping almost at saying the exact same thing. We'll find out. Tanya, I just wanted, because I know we already discussed this before, and as we know, and Candace and I have said, like, things can go off in all sorts of directions. So, because there's so much to talk about. With that said, I mean, it shows that when you were working, you were a very compassionate worker. I think now this kind of leads to, and Candace, I don't know if this is where you were kind of headed, but for us to kind of jump into what you saw that you disagreed with while you were working there.
One thing that I was going to jump at, because I wasn't there, but I want us to get there. But all I wrote down here was, we're a whole person,
yeah.
Right? And I'm hitting a lot on personal things. So, but with a little help, we can make a huge contribution is something that we had said before we started officially podcasting here. And that's evident. So, like, if I just were to give a personal right now example, I have an injury from carrying around my chair. Now, it's not work. It's from not having proper care, but I can't get in and out of my home anymore because I've had to carry my wheelchair in and out of my house. And now I have structural injury of my hip and knee. And but for that wheelchair not being funded and the ramp to accessible housing, I wouldn't have this injury, and now I'm alone. I cannot get in and out of my home, blah, blah, blah. Family dynamic. Oh my goodness. To ask a 16-year-old to carry your laundry up and down the stairs is, you know what I mean? They don't understand. Families don't understand, and systems just assume support. And we've talked about this already. I just wanted to touch on that whole person thing, because you were, and it is beyond true. One injury can change your life for good. I'm sitting here in my wheelchair, like, that I can't get in and out of my house, so I can't go work, even though I'm highly skilled. It's anyhow. And the stuff that Tanya, you saw that made you have this drive to change something, because you've you've given us such an amazing groundwork of how to understand how these systems are supposed to work. But what are you really seeing?
What are you really seeing?
We're going to mute ourselves again.
I'm seeing the exact opposite. And, you know, I saw bad. I don't want to take away saying bad stuff doesn't happen in Alberta, because I worked there as well. And I saw some very poor decision making from some people. However, I didn't see how people's personal information was being just so blatantly disregarded. And the information that was collected is just a blatant disregard of people's private health information. So getting back to when WorkSafe requests something. So WorkSafe will send out a letter to your doctor, and it says the part of body that they're allowed to collect. It explains what legislative authority they have to collect, and that the physicians are absolutely required to respond by law, because if not, then there's can be penalties for the doctors who aren't complying. So the doctors absolutely do, when they sit down and they get their health staff and their medical receptionists to go through your chart and black out, redact every single thing that does not have it, what to do with this right arm. Okay. So your healthcare providers are doing the right thing, and then they're sending that information off to WorkSafe. So then your case manager gets to review it and then make a good decision. Hopefully that's what's supposed to happen. But what I seen at WorkSafe is they go outside and they get a company that's called Canadian Health Solutions here in New Brunswick. And basically what that is, it's a bunch of doctors and there's physiotherapists, like it's a multidisciplinary approach is what they say. And in like Canadian Health Solutions is only supposed to be given the information that WorkSafe has collected. Okay. They don't have the authority to collect information on you because you did not give CHS that authority. But if they do collect, we're still in the box of the right hand. But that's not what is happening. I have seen men who, for example, has a right hand injury, and I have read chart notes on their inflamed prostates. I have read notes on their erectile dysfunction and their issues in bed with their partners. I have read about Mrs. Injured Worker's Pap test, and when she's talking about her periods and her mammograms, I've saw all of that too. And I'm just sitting there thinking, what the hell are these people doing? I don't have a right to see this. So I'm from a very, very small town in New Brunswick. Like, let me tell you, there are maybe 1,000 of us, you know, maybe 2,000 if you're like opening up and hitting all the little small communities outside. Like I used to say, like, there's more people on the train and like in my train car than there is in my whole town. I was going to
train car again. Say it again. Say train car, please.
Train car.
So just in case you don't all know, we're spread across the country right now. So yeah. Tanya's on the East Coast. I'm here in Ontario, and Kyla's west of us in Calgary. So I love that accent, lady. I'm going to let you keep going. But
where was I?
Shoot,
I derailed on my brain.
You were at the part of seeing men's prostate. Yeah, that stuff.
And another thing about me that's kind of to take this into consideration as well, like I am the president of a cancer fund that is also for the community of Plastrock. And we give out about up to $15,000 a year to people in the community, because people have to travel sometimes 4 hours to get to an oncologist here because we're such a rural province. So what we do is we give up to $500 every year to help with the costs associated with travel. So if you're from our hometown and you have to travel, then we're going to pay that cost for you. We're going to give you $500 every year in gas cards, or that you can go. We use Irving here, Irving Oil. They have gas stations, and there's restaurants, and like there's little pharmacies in some of them. Like, so it gives them that financial boost kind of to get in and just to alleviate some of the costs associated with that. So keep it in mind when I'm reviewing these decisions, sometimes there's somebody from Plastrock, from my hometown, that comes across and my desk. And when I would see anything from, it's called Tobik Valley, like that's the community that we're in. If I saw anything that started with Tobik Valley, if I seen anything with Plastrock, New Brunswick, if I recognized a name or a last name, like I would not even open the file to see what their injury was, because I knew what was there, what could be there. And let me tell you something, I did not feel comfortable with walking in to the local Savvy Z in my hometown and having Mr. Injured Worker look me in the face and him know that I know about his erectile dysfunction. Like, there's no respect or dignity for these people. Like, my God, your case manager has no right to that information. So from here, Canadian Health Solution is pulling all of this new medical information that WorkSafe never had, because they didn't have the authority to pull, because their family doctors are going to say, whoa, no, 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 no. You're not pulling that information. They have a right hand injury and we're only going to give you the stuff on their right hand, but they found a way around it. See? So now they get their, what I always call them, is their hired goons to get this information that they're not entitled to. And then what's worse is when they get the information that they're not entitled to have, it's like they're little worms going in through your history and pulling it out to say, oh, well, maybe this is the reason. Maybe this is the reason. They use that to disentitle. And God forbid, hear me when I say, God forbid, you ever talk about mental health to your care providers, because Canadian Health Solutions is going to use that against you. Hear me when I say, if you have mental health issues in New Brunswick and WorkSafe New Brunswick gets any vibe of that, they're going to use that against you. And I can say for sure that they said to a nurse who had a hip injury so severe that she required, I think she's had 2 or 3 surgeries now, and she's on the list for a hip replacement. And her mother died. And the staff at WorkSafe said to her, there's nothing wrong with your hip. Your mother died. You're grieving out through your hip. That's what these freaking people said to a nurse who has a thought process and who understands the composition of a body and how it works. And then once, like, they tried to convince her that, no, there's nothing wrong with your hip. It's in your head because your mom died. Once they finally got the medical information that they're entitled to and seen that, oh my God, no. They looked at this nurse and said, my God, you must feel good, eh, that we believe you. And it's like, this is the thought process, okay, of the people that are running the workers' compensation system here in New Brunswick. And it is disgusting. They look to the title.
Are these people all health professionals?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, this is exactly what, I mean, this is what patients suspect has been happening. In many cases, it's what we talk about. It's what Candace and I have spoken about on this podcast. This is everything that we suspected. It is, you know, and we're not saying again that it's every system or it's every, you know, but we knew there was at least pockets of it, right? And yeah, that's all I have to say.
Yeah. But one thing that you should know as a patient, and the whole FIPA thing, That's your personal record. If you don't agree with anything in your personal record, you can have it redacted. You can make sure that nobody sees it. So if there are diagnoses that you feel are going to hinder your care moving forward, get your records, have them redacted. Go ahead, Tanya.
Absolutely. Do exactly what Candace just said. That is your recourse. You need to get this information in front of the oversight bodies who have the authority to make sure these government agencies are following the rules. This is your health information. This is the most private, personal information that is sacred. It's sacred. Okay. That's why these laws are in place. So, as a decision review officer, like, we were seeing that information as well. So, I mean, it's still really bad, but it's still in the umbrella of WorkSafe, right? Like, it's still wrong. It's still illegal, but, you know, it's still in the building of WorkSafe. They took it one step further. That's not even the case anymore. They disbanded DRO. So DRO used to be made up of about, it's called the Decision Review Office. And that used to be made up of about 10, 12 really good subject matter experts. And we would review the information. And I would say, and like I'm guessing, I would say we probably would overturn, I know myself would probably overturn up to 80%. Of decisions that would come across my desk. And it was really starting to make the claims staff uncomfortable that we were overturning this. So what the board of directors at WorkSafe got together with, it's Tim Peterson is our CEO. What? I can't hear. You can't hear. You're muted.
Apologize. The audio was cutting out.
Okay.
Phone call. I thought I had my stuff on do not disturb. I'm going to mute myself again and fix that with my camera off. And I apologize. Man, that is really important. You need to say that again.
Okay. So what the board of directors at WorkSafe and the president, actually, he was just an acting president at the time. He didn't even have the job. And the acting general counsel, David Luther, all got together and said, we're not really liking what's coming out of the decision review office. So they went ahead and contracted out with an external law firm. It's called McGinnis Cooper. And it's not in New Brunswick. It's outside of New Brunswick. It's in Halifax, Nova Scotia, is where their main head office is. But I mean, McGinnis Cooper is like East Coast, you know? And if you go on, and I encourage you to go on McGinnis Cooper website and hear me when I say they are a very successful company. They are very successful in their clients that they represent. And I want to be very clear. The clientele that they represent are employers. If you look on their website, some of the headings of news stories I've seen was McGinnis Cooper wins human rights for human rights against this employer for this, right? So it's really protecting the employer. And I'm not saying that's wrong because employers need law firms to protect them and their rights, just like injured workers do. Everybody has the right to representation. But what is going on here is this law firm who specializes in employer issues are now reviewing WorkSafe New Brunswick appeals.
So quick question, the board of directors that made this decision, mm-hmm. are they health professionals?
No.
So let's talk about that for a second, because they've made this decision to throw from the DRO over to lawyers that protect employers, not the decision review office, which was in place to make sure that the claim was accurate and focused solely on the quality of function and the issue, work injury.
Whatever appeal issue was brought to us, it's our job. And let me tell you, I have been in the Workers' Compensation Act for almost 15 years, and I still struggle with some of the interpretations, okay? Because it's not a user-friendly act. You really have to break down the wording. Is it and or is it you need this and this? You know what I mean? Like the legal terminology and those key words and or matters, okay? And a part of being a good decision reviewer is reviewing your decisions that go forward to the WCAT or to the Appeals Commission out in Alberta, and whether or not your decision is upheld as right or wrong. One thing I loved about it, it's so cool to sit there and read how another decision maker weighed evidence, whether they come out with the same conclusion or you can only learn and grow from the oversight bodies, okay? Because they help you think of how the intent of the legislation is supposed to be, okay? Like there's intent behind it. And the intent is to entitle, it's not disentitle. The intent is that you are subject matter experts. And if you know that Mr. Worker's leg is broke and he's going for surgery and it's in the middle of winter and he's living by himself, you're the subject matter expert. It's your job to make sure he can get in and out of his house. It's your job to make sure there's somebody cleaning his sidewalk. It's your job to make sure that he has somebody to get him to that doctor's appointment so he's not missing out. That's your job.
Because he's paying into those premiums, those he's been paying off his checks since the day he started working.
Only the employers. Yeah. WorkSafe is 100%, WCB is 100% funded by employer premiums. So employers are taking, this is like their net income, okay? This is coming right out of what is like their bread and butter, that they're paying these premiums to basically sit back and watch their workers be abused by the system. And like my spouse is an owner, and he just sent like a $77,000 check to WorkSafe New Brunswick. And knowing what they're doing and what they have done to me and what they've done to the worker, like it makes him sick as well. But if he doesn't do this, then he doesn't have WorkSafe clearance and he can't go get another job. He can't get a
How in the world is it okay for the board of directors, for such such a body of like, holy, I'm just,
this is,
I don't know how to
ethical,
word it right now,
yes,
right? But it feels
issues are coming in,
that there's not a board of directors that is to do with health and injury.
Yeah.
That's it. That,
so,
I don't know. That's confusing. I'm going to shut up and let Tanya talk.
Yeah, we're
going to
let Tanya talk.
Sorry, but
this is where the unethical.
It's just a big
whoa.
Like, yeah. And this is like, it's so bad. And it's so bad because, like, you have to think, like, when you're calling a law firm, okay, the first thing they ask is, who are you going against? And then they do a little search and then they make sure there's no conflict of interest. And like, that's like step one in getting representation. You cannot ever convince me, not ever, that McGinnis Cooper has never, ever, ever once presided over a case that there has been an injured worker of New Brunswick involved in. And if they have, then they are not allowed to review the file because there's a conflict of interest. And that's why you have to keep it in draw. That's why it's an internal body. Okay. So there's no conflict of interest. And let me tell you, I used to work for, it's called JDI here. And it was a company that put me in very bad situations. And when those files would come across my desk, you know, part of me is like, let's see what this slick son of a gun is up to. But I seen myself that, no, I can't do that. So if a file was assigned to me from JDI, I would again send it back and say, this isn't fair to JDI. Me and them had a falling out. We went toe to toe against ethics and integrity. They don't want me making a decision on their appeals. It's not fair to them. Even though they don't play by those fairness rules, nobody's ever, ever, ever going to jeopardize my integrity. So let's go back down to McGinnis Cooper. Not only is this external for-profit law firm, like remember that. These people aren't non-for-profit. These people are about making their bank accounts big. That's it.
So there are firms that are completely nonprofit, like Arch Disability Law over here in Ontario. Yep. Wouldn't they be a great oversight body? Okay, back to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But at the same time, when you're getting external law firms, you have to take into account that, yes, like here it's called McGivray Disability, I believe. Like I can't pronounce, and I'm probably butchering the name, but that's what they're focused on. Their focus is on being there for the injured worker. And like, that's what their mandate is. It still would not be fair to give them all the appeals, because then it's not being fair to the employers. That's why it has to stay in size, so it's impartial. So I can say, as a reviewer, I can say, okay, I know I have a direct conflict of interest here, right? That's part of it, that these individuals can make that call and it can be sent to another decision review officer so they can get a fair shake. So not only is it going out to McGinnis Cooper, it's going out to articling students. They're not even lawyers. They could be the crayon eaters in the back with their D minus grade. And like, I have talked to, I'm going to say about 10, maybe more, but I'm comfortable with using 10, that I've talked to about 10 different lawyers, and I've asked them one question, like, what information, like what training did you have on the Workers' Compensation Act in law school? Every single lawyer says to me, we had one class. We had one class on the Workers' Compensation Act. And basically it said the Workers' Compensation Act is a very specialized part of law and legislation. You leave the Workers' Compensation Act to the Workers' Compensation Act specialists. So this is what these students have, okay? Like that's their background. And they're the ones that are making the decisions. They're not subject matter experts. They don't even know, like they couldn't even recognize if a decision was made, like, because there's sometimes before you can even review a decision, you have to review new evidence. And then you have to determine if that new evidence is material and substantial. Like there's other legal tests that you have to get to sometimes before you can review the real issue in front of you. Like sometimes there's like that prerequisite work that you have to get to that only subject matter experts know. So they're just blindly reviewing these. And based on what like the stats that I'm seeing coming out since DRO has been disbanded, like the majority now of decisions that were overturned by us are now being upheld as correct and true. So now they're putting the injured workers into an unfair, really, really unfair system, because the people that are supposed to be subject matter experts should have the knowledge and the expertise when they look at a claim. Like when I looked at a claim working at DRO, I could say, oh, there's something missing here. Mm-hmm. There's something missing here. How did they get this? And then I had the authority to send it back saying, no. Something is missing here. You need to go and request this, or you need to weigh this. But these people don't have the knowledge, because let me tell you, it takes a lot of confidence to be able to send something back in writing to a decision maker and saying, you missed this, 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 and this. You need to do this. Then it can come back to me. Then it'll be ready for me to review. They don't have the knowledge and skill set to do that. Okay. So after the DRO was disbanded, and just keep in mind that when I'm taking it one step further about how terrible this is, part of administrative justice and the laws of administrative justice is you are able to know who the decision maker on your claim file is, unless they're like you're threatening them, like their personal safety is impacted, then you would just sign it like the decision review office or something like that. But that is like 2% of the time. Okay. You have a right to know your decision maker. You have a right to understand who they are and what. This hurts my soul, girls. Get ready. Hold your heart. What McGinnis Cooper is doing is they're writing the decisions down on McGinnis Cooper letterhead, and then they're sending the decision back. WorkSafe New Brunswick is cut and pasting their decision and putting it on WorkSafe New Brunswick letterhead and sending it out like it's intellectual property of the workers' compensation system here. There's one person working in the decision review office now. That's it. But every single, just like anybody who didn't know behind the scenes, they have no idea that it's coming from McGinnis Cooper. That is being hid from them. They're taking and cutting and pasting and putting it on WorkSafe New Brunswick letterhead. Like it's a subject matter expert from WorkSafe that are making these claim decisions, and it's a lie.
Yeah. Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Now that is just a gross, what do I call this? Infringement on people's rights in this country.
Injustice.
It's injustice. That's the word. That's the word. I have MS, and so language is hard sometimes. I'm a publicist. Go figure.
Hey, that's why we're all here together, because we're all going to work on each other's strengths. We all have weaknesses. It doesn't mean that we're
going to voice people. Yes. And oh my gosh, the whole point in the beginning of this, Kyla and I said, if we don't earn a dollar, that's fine. We're here to amplify voices. Okay. We're here to amplify voices. Yeah. Everybody does in the beginning. That's what they say. Right.
Yeah.
Your voice, Okay. So what would happen if, for instance, somebody, I don't know, grassroots activist, were to find a whole bunch of people who were denied claims or who were in the appeals process or who were in the internal review process, for them to personally ask, because it's your right to know who is reviewing, what would happen then?
It's very hard to say this, but what needs to happen is every single decision that was reviewed needs to be reviewed again.
It has to go in front of
subject matter experts. And I feel so bad saying this because I know my boyfriend was one that just sent $77,000 to WorkSafe, and it's his money that's just been wasted, gone. But
so how do we
as
amass
lawyer, he people, says, like, yes, we need the right decisions. You know what I mean?
Amass enough people, though, to get it to be something that they really need to know, that they really need to care about. Like, this is not the only system. That is the thing that's getting me the most is this board of directors situation. And is this a public, nonprofit board of directors that we can see, that we can have a look at?
Oh yes. All their expenses are up on the WorkSafe New Brunswick website. And let me tell you, they get, when they show up, like if you look at their expenses, like they are very well compensated. I believe a couple of years ago was getting like more, almost as much as the president. And it's like, ew, like.
Citizens don't really know, right? Like they don't know, one, they don't know their rights. Mm-hmm. That is hard to find. But once you find them, that's how you navigate, you know? And of course it's hard to find for a reason. Yeah. But the thing about, they don't know that they can see every single dollar that is taken from, doesn't matter what system or whether, you know, like every single dollar that is managed in a public way has to have a path that is on paper that is public.
Yeah.
So if enough people know about these situations, that's why we're doing this today, folks. If enough people know about these situations, they can bring attention to it. And once these bodies who are kind of doing their best to fly under the radar start to get enough attention on them and their malpractice and injustices, you know, mismanagement of our money, folks, this is our country. The mismanagement of our money. If we're not looking, we can't do anything to stop it. So I'm sorry. That was huge. Like to hear that this is going on and that a board of directors is at the helm that, you know, I'd like to know who these are. Myself personally.
I named them all today in one of my videos, every single one of them.
Oh, we love you. We're going to track back to you with this podcast, right to that episode of whatever you did, man.
Ladies, for myself, Candace, it's time for me to step out. I have another prior engagement. So that's why, Candace, I'm going to let her take over for me here. I still have a feeling that. No, I mean, this is all kind of what we spoke about the last time. You know, we're getting into a little bit more in depth with it now. But I mean, to the listeners out there, this is serious. Like, I can't even begin to explain how serious this actually is. Tanya is very brave for coming out with everything. And, you know, from what I hear, you know, Tanya, you have other persons that are coming out, but they're not coming out publicly, but they're coming to you. And I guess with that, ladies, I'm going to sign off because I have to go to my prior meetings here. But Candace and Tanya, take it away. So to the listeners out there, talk to you later, and I'll have Candace will have to take over for me.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have to say the goodbye. What is it that you say?
Oh, I can't even remember now. Do your own, yeah.
I'm gonna. Don't worry about it.
Okay. All right. So bye, ladies. Have a good
one. See you later.
Candace, can you kick me out, or can I kick myself out?
You can just leave.
Okay.
There should be a red button up there.
I can't see it. Yeah. Okay. Bye, ladies.
See ya. Hey.
Oh my. Okay. So we are at a point where you just people's minds should be really blown by now.
Let me tell you. There's staff at WorkSafe who have been injured on the job who refuse to put in a claim because of the information that will be pulled on them. And they don't want their coworkers seeing that. So there's staff members who are disentitling themselves so they're not in the system that they're in. Like, think about that for a second. Think about that for a second. Like, that's staff volumes.
Members. And they're coming, they're telling you this?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, staff members. Oh my God. Okay, so staff members.
Person looks at a situation and thinks, then that's enough to say to recuse yourself, right?
This is starting to make me feel, I've said this before, and it feels like by design right now that there's a lot of things changing within systems that people aren't watching. And I've used the term, bear with me.
Yeah.
I've used the term quiet genocide when it comes to sick and disabled folks in this country. And, you know, it eventually will become just, there's a lot of people who are just, that's the way it is.
Yeah.
Well, that's the way it is going to wind up exterminating people who could make huge contributions to the well-being of this country and the people of this land.
Yeah.
And if you're thinking that the systems are there to protect you, think again.
Absolutely. Wow. There's no truer statement than that Like, that's the one thing I have found is that the systems and the overbody, the oversight bodies that are in place are part of it, or their information's being held back from them. So they're not even being told the full picture, and they can't.
Right. They're hiring people that have no clue. Right. Students, they're just doing what they're told because they want to get a good grade. They want to do.
They're articling students.
So they're doing exactly students. What they're told. What is articling? Go ahead and explain what articling
it's part
students.
Of. It's kind of like when doctors go out and do an internship and nurses, like that part of education before you actually write your bar, like before you write your license.
It's like a residency.
Yeah. Like it's like you're still in training. You haven't graduated. Right.
So this is like practical experience right. for them in
yes,
the real world.
Kind of like an internship.
However, they're definitely going to do exactly what they're told.
100%. Because they don't know.
You know, and
they don't
wages
have the confidence
are subsidized.
To question. Like, that's
this
the thing. You have to have confidence to question, and you have to have the experience to be able to look at these claim files and identify if there's missing information. And the reason why I'm going to say that is because I'm going to now jump into once they disbanded DRO and they had to figure out what to do with us, because I have a background in law enforcement, they stuck me in as a senior investigator. And my job description was to protect the integrity of the workers' compensation system. So part of that is really like literally
integrity.
Going out.
That's the word she said, guys, integrity.
Integrity. So it's yeah. holding people accountable who are abusing the system, because there are injured workers out there who are committing fraud. It's about right. 2% of yeah. them. It's not 98% of them. You know what I mean? It's not.
Well, I definitely know what you mean, because Doug Ford, during the pandemic, when he was trying to explain away why he wouldn't give any more money to disabled folks who are starving, it was that a lot of us are fraudsters. Are you kidding me? He made the entire province think that we're all just a bunch of money grubbers. Nobody wants to live in this kind of squalor. Just trust
no.
me.
No.
I want to work.
Same here. The food banks can't keep food on the shelves. Like, they can't.
This all feels a little by design, and it's terrifying. It's terrifying.
Part of, like, my job as a senior investigator was like really working closely with the case managers. And, you know, that kind of put me in an awkward position, because I just come from the decision review office where they were literally calling me whatever in claim files because I didn't agree with their decision. Right. So like I always said, we called each other like the island of misfit toys. That's what we called ourselves in DRO, okay? Because we were like the redheaded stepchild. Like, WorkSafe did not like that we were holding them accountable. So as right. I'm over in now claims, I'm starting to work closer with these case managers. And for as many as they're bad, there is double that are good. That just maybe don't have the courage to speak up. And I say to those people, like, you have to understand, if you are complacent, you are complicit. Like,
there is no such thing as neutral language.
No.
I shared a meme the other day. Like, if you see someone in an abusive relationship or someone abusing others, and you choose not to pick sides, you are giving space for the abuser.
Absolutely.
That's it.
Absolutely.
That's all.
Absolutely.
So thank you for that.
And I'm probably going to cry, because I have never been the same since this meeting. If these people can only tribute and come out into society one day a month and be really, really productive, God damn it, we're going to celebrate you. And maybe next month we'll get a day and a half out of you. And maybe the month after we may only get a half a day, but we're going to reflect on that. And we're going to try to get you bigger and better the next month. You know what I mean? That's what people in these positions need to do. They need to celebrate. So I'm sitting in there, and like, this is my like first interview as a senior investigator. And it wasn't my case. So I'm just kind of sitting in and listening. This senior who come in, like, and is making like $500 a month. Like, that's nothing. Like, we all know that. Like, that's not even your electricity payment here in New Brunswick. Let's be very clear about that. So he says, he just starts crying. Like, this man in front of me is sitting there and he has his slew of medications out on the table. And he's like crying. He's like, I can't deny it. Yes, I did. I went and worked that one day. I did. My brother-in-law, because I had no food. I had no food, he said. And he said, I live 2 minutes down the house, down the road from here, 2 minutes. He said, come to my house right now. I'll show you. I have a half a loaf of bread and a thing of peanut butter in my fridge. He said, there was water coming in my house, leaking through the roof. He said, so my brother-in-law said to me, you know what? Come and pick up some scraps. Do what you can. I know you're disabled, but, you know, try to get him out of that house. And he says, I can't even deny that it's me on that video, because look, I'm wearing the same clothes. So his work clothes for doing labor work was the exact same clothes that he put on to come in and sit down with us investigators. So when he starts talking about this, this is what I do. I put my head down and I'm trying to hold back my tears because I have to be objective. You know, I have to be professional, but I'm still human, right? So I put my head down and I start doodling on my paper. So we get done the interview and stuff, and then we are going to meet with our leaders. And I left there and I called my sister and I'm crying. I'm like, I don't think I can do this. Like, this was really bad. Like, this was really bad. Like, there's people who are out to defraud the system 100%. But then there are people who have been abused by the system and are literally just trying to maybe get another loaf of bread and their thing of peanut butter that's almost gone. Okay. And that's what this man was doing. So I go in and I get myself all, get my tears and stuff, compose myself, and I walk in. And there's the other investigators. They're laughing, and I didn't really know what they were laughing about. So I sit down and everybody's like, hey, Tanya, like laughing at me, poking fun of me. I heard you had a hard time. And I'm like, I was taken back by it. Okay. Like, my empathy was shamed. Okay. And let me tell you, people, every single person, you do not want a leader with no empathy. People who I'm like, yeah, I said it was really, really, really hard. And they were laughing at me and they were laughing at this injured worker who was in the same clothes. Right. And they thought that was hilarious. They thought this was hilarious. And I'm just sitting there like, I'm shaking. My hands are shaking. Inside of my core is shaking. Cause
I'm going into spasms. I'm so kind of viscerally mad right now.
Like, what is happening? Like, when our decisions is making it so this man has a loaf, like a half a loaf of bread and peanut butter in his fridge. And we're laughing at that.
Why am I still getting a call? I am so sorry. I had turned that off.
It's bad.
It's a universal F you.
Yeah. And I left there and I called my sister again on the way home. And it was like a 3.5 hour drive on my way home. And I basically cried the whole way home, thinking, how in the hell am I going to fit in this new role? Because at least when I was at the draw, I had control over what came across my desk. I had control to make right. I had control to say to these decision makers, what you are doing is wrong. And I had the authority to write on paper, no, you can't do that. And this is what you got to do. And they could not challenge my authority because I was the final decision maker. So when I come from that very challenging but very rewarding work that you could make sure that the decisions were right. And you go in and you get to hear the conversations that are happening in the decision makers, like in the context of these decision makers and leaders, and you think back to your time at Drow, and you think back to the terrible decisions that you've seen, and you're like, oh, I get it.
I'm so happy you were able to join in and listen to us today. If you have an episode idea or would like to share your story, please email me at info@thepatientsperspective.com or join our Facebook page under the same name. From all of us who are working hard bringing patient issues to light, thank you for tuning in and supporting The Patient's Perspective.